The Merit Systems Protection Board recently released its annual report card for 2014. It summarizes the agency's performance in the last year and lays out some targets to try and hit in the current year. For some more on the report card, as well as what's hopefully in store for 2015, I spoke with Susan Sway Grundman. She's the chairwoman of the MSPB, and she told me more about what's in this annual review.
It lays out our strategic goals. It talks about the future, plans for the future. But it also is a recap of the previous year. So it's a report card, essentially, of 2014. And if you go into the report, you can see that even after losing 17 days at the beginning of the fiscal year, that every office within an MSPB excelled. Let me throw some numbers at you. Starting with the regional and field offices, they handled over 16,000 cases compared to what they do usually, 5,000 to 6,000 cases. So they had three times that amount. And yes, 11,000 of those cases were furlough appeals. But they also handled, in addition to that, more than 5,000 non-furlough cases. So they kept pace with previous years. Now, in headquarters, we also had kind of a record-breaking year. We handled about over 1,000 cases compared to usually 700 to 800. And quantity does not mean we lack quality, because our affirmance rate by our reviewing court, the Federal Circuit, is at a three-year high. It's at 96%.
So. And do all the cases automatically go to that court, or do people generally accept the decisions and walk away and that's the way it is?
I think a smaller percentage goes to court because it does take a lot of effort and it's hard to be pro se up there. But, you know, the numbers are good. Let me throw another thing at you. Our studies office, as you know, is the other statutory function that we have. They also exceeded in many areas. They issued five reports during the year. And I think you've talked about them on your shows, such as favoritism, sexual orientation policy, perceptions, and the VA hiring. They held a fantastic Sunshine Act meeting with our stakeholders and the board members. And that meeting actually helped set our studies agenda for the next 3 to 5 years.
All right, so let's talk about the, what are you planning? First of all, before we leave 2014, as you said, it was a difficult year because of, one, the sequestration and furlough hit the agency itself, but it also produced a bumper crop of cases. Where do those cases stand now, the rest of the furlough-related ones? How many left?
You're asking at the perfect timing, because we are happy to report we have passed the 50% mark. We absolutely anticipate that the bulk, in fact, not possibly all of them, will be done by the end of this year.
All right. So, and I think earlier last year, you had said that it's not the kind of thing you can take as kind of a class action and do them all en masse. Each one does, for the most part, get an individual hearing.
Many of them are consolidated. They're consolidated by facility. They're consolidated by representative. And they're certainly consolidated by issue. We're starting to see that now in headquarters, because those cases that have left the regions are showing up in headquarters. And we have about a little less than 2,000 of those cases right now. But again, the real question is, are those 2,000 individual claims or 5 or 6 cases covering 2,000 employees? We're sorting through that right now.
I was wondering, are there any lessons learned? Because it's not often that you get the chance to create this kind of history of cases with all those people having been furloughed and then filing grievances. And so are there lessons learned from this that the government can use as guidance for, you know, let's hope it doesn't, but it could happen again?
If there are lessons learned for us, we've learned how to process cases efficiently. And we've also learned that we have to move into e-adjudication with this massive number. In terms of the furloughs themselves, I think it's, you can see the frustration on both sides. While money may have been saved as a result of the sequestration, still resources, time spent by employees and the agency to defend these types of cases. So I'm not sure how many winners there were in the end.
And just out of just a mechanics question, how long does it take to handle one of these cases? And does the furloughed person or whoever it might be have to be there? And does their manager have to be there?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it depends on the case, depends on the claims that are raised. Our average processing time pre-furlough influx was 93 days per case in the regional and field offices. Last year, it was about 262, and that's because the furlough cases come in and they blend with the existing cases, whistleblowing cases, veterans claim cases, removal suspensions. Those cases are still being processed as they normally would. The furlough cases are just folding in.
So did the furlough cases increase your backlog of the regular cases?
I don't think so. I think, as I said before, the administrative judges were pretty good in terms of keeping pace with the existing docket so that nobody suffered as a result. There was still time lost. So it was not quick as it usually is every year. But I think it's 115 days non-furlough cases, so still pretty good.
We're speaking with Susan Sway Grundman. She is the chairwoman of the Merit Systems Protection Board. And the other thing that happened in this past year was the new legislation affecting the senior executive service at Veterans Affairs. And you've been on the air earlier talking about that, too. But that must have broken new ground for you because there have been a couple of cases. And I guess the irony is they can't make it actually up to the board members themselves, those particular cases.
I think that was deliberate, not coming to the board members. As you said, Tom, we've had three cases so far, and three's not a lot, but there have already been some lessons learned. So far, we have seen that these cases are very, very complex, lots of documents, over 1,000 pages in some cases. And the parties really are giving it everything they've got. You know, they've put everything into the case. They're high-profile removals. There's a lot at stake. For us, though, we've learned that it generally takes more than one administrative judge to handle this type of case. So you probably have one administrative judge, an associate judge helping him or her out, maybe a writing attorney, paralegal administrative support along with that. And that's significant because these cases are being handled in the regional offices. And when you have only 5 or 6 administrative judges in a regional office, that's half the staff. And as a practical matter, we now know these cases bump to the top of the list. So any other cases that the administrative judge has at the time will have to wait until the VA case is over.
And I think I would also say, too, that the judges are to be commended because in reading the transcripts of the decisions, they weren't really pushed along by all of the events swirling around them. For example, in the case of one of the VA people, they found that she actually didn't have anything to do with the big issue that swept the public, which was the scheduling issue. There were other problems that she had that merited her dismissal, perhaps. But the judges seemed to be objective in the way they looked at it.
Absolutely. And I think that we're talking about the same case because what we've seen so far is that this faster pace really favors no one. In terms of the appellant, he or she has to find a representative and get that person up to speed in a very short amount of time. And the agency also has to get up to speed in a short amount of time. There's a lot of discovery. If you looked at the Hellman case, the agency didn't answer a lot of discovery. And ultimately, the big charge, the infamous charge of the patient wait lists didn't stick, but something else, as you said, stuck. So they weren't able to prove that charge. It's a complicated case. 21 days is not going to be enough.
All right. So I guess we should move on now because now you've got to look toward 2015 and beyond, and your strategic plan has some goals and things you hope to accomplish. Let's talk about what you see ahead.
All right. Let's talk about that. There are maybe three or four things we can talk about specifically. One of them is not quite as sexy, and that's e-adjudication. It is a multi-year plan for us. One of our annual performance goals is to improve the efficiency of case processing, and part of that initiative is to move from a paper-based system into an electronic system. Currently, we do have mandatory filing in 2 regional offices, Denver and Washington.
Mandatory e-filing?
Yes, e-filing. And that's only for agencies and attorneys, not for pro se appellants. 80% of our pleadings are already filed electronically. The plan is to move to mandate e-filing through all the regions. And certainly the furloughs and the VASCSR cases with a short processing time has taught us that e-filing is the way to go. So that doesn't mean that this is the end of the paper file, but it certainly means that we are going to be focusing on e-filing. It is a multi-year plan, so it's not going to happen this year in full. And there's going to be a lot of stakeholder participation, I mean, internally and externally as well. So more to come on that.
And a detailed question, a pro se appellant is what?
Is somebody who is not represented, someone who's representing themselves.
Okay. And so looking at an e-filing system, which I guess there's an IT part of all of this, is there some other filing system that exists in the government that you could adapt instead of starting out from scratch?
We're currently talking to other agencies to pick up the lessons that they have learned. But we haven't latched on to the model that's going to work on best for us at this point.
And how would e-filing help the administrative judges and the board? In other words, you would look at everything on a screen instead of a paper file. Would that speed things up?
Exactly. And it also speeds up transmission of files. There are less errors, less lost paper. I mean, all those practical things that come with actual files. Some of our files are very, very deep. And to have them all stored sequentially is important, not just for us, but for the parties as well.
I guess eventually you could have a search system in there so you could find something quickly that might be buried deep in a pile of paper somewhere.
That's the goal.